Here we go. Here we go.
Ugh.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I am short.
Big Show time!
Nothing wrong with getting a little dirty.
It's about fucking time someone else is.
When you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing Tech Show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are linking bad. For this moment, go direct to DLNTS.org. And the IC channel is linuxlink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1095 of the Links Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joel.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
I'm mostly here.
And we have Dave.
Hello.
So last week, I had espoused my joy over doing the transition of our Gen 1 to Gen 2 functions. And on Monday, I was like, I'm ready to go to production with this one function. But as we know, there's going to be a little production outage. Not necessarily an outage, because it's like most people don't directly interface with this, but it is a web-based function. And like, because of the way that Google had engineered their services, you can't deploy a Gen 2 function in place of a Generation 1 function with the same name. You can do that. Like, you can update functions, but this is like a new deployment, so you can't have two of the same name. Therefore, you have to delete the one and deploy the other one. So there would be about a minute, maybe two, of the service not being available. And because there are two types of functions, they're triggered by either HTTP or PubSub. And PubSub is like a queue-based technology where messages get put on a queue that are subscribed by the function, and they get picked up by the function as they come in on the topic. Therefore, if the function is not available, they will just stack up on the topic until the function is available. Whereas with the HTTP-triggered function, it's just like any other web service. If you try to hit it and it's not there, then you're going to get a 404. And that was, you know, we ideally don't like that, to which another guy that I work with, who floats between a bunch of different teams, is like, you know, we should really figure out a way to deploy services like these without a disruption. And I'm like, damn it. You know, why is this always happening on stuff that I'm working on? Scope creeping on this, right? So it's a good idea. And we started brainstorming ideas on how to do this, which the challenge that this makes is, so this wasn't behind any load balancers or anything. It was behind another service, a web interface service, Fastly, but not our Fastly system, but another one that secures it via keys and stuff. And so that service goes directly back to the function. So we started thinking about things like, if we could put it behind our load balancer, then we can more easily manage this. But there's one problem with putting it behind the Google load balancer, is that it's all managed through Terraform, and there's been a major hiccup obstacle to us for doing this, and that is, the way that the Google load balancer works is you have what's called the URL map, and that URL map basically translates paths to backend. So like, if you have a URL that says go to search, you know, has search in there, it would then take that request and pass it back to your search application. So it does that through what's called the backend services, and which are tied to network endpoint groups. And the backend service has network endpoint groups associated with it. So there's a back end for each one of the applications. That back end says use this network endpoint group. That network endpoint group has a service that it's associated to, whether it's you know, going back to a function or to a Cloud Run application or to another address or whatever. And the thing is, Google has set it up that you can't remove a back-end service before you remove the network endpoint group. If you try to, it throws an error and says this back-end service is in use by this network endpoint group. So you have to delete the network endpoint group before you can delete the back-end service. So maybe you can see where I'm going with this. Terraform, once it's all defined in there, if you attempt to make a change on the network endpoint group, it wants to alter the back-end service. So the way that it proceeds with the change is it wants to delete the back-end service to recreate it, but it can't because it's already in use by another network endpoint group. So when you create these things, it does it correctly. The order of creating these is it creates the network endpoint group, then the backend service, and that gets associated to the URL map. But when it tries to do like a breakdown, a change, or a deletion, it attempts to delete the backend service before the network endpoint group, and it throws an error and won't let you do it. So that threw a huge wrench into our plans because we've always had to struggle with this. And so there's been an open request on GitHub for the Google Terraform stuff that's been in place since like 2020. So we're going on 5 years now about this problem, the order of operation, and it hasn't been fixed yet. But there were some workarounds, and there was something that I was kind of familiar with, but I didn't know if it would actually apply here or how to apply it. But in Terraform, there is a block that you can apply to any resource because it's a metadata block specifically for Terraform that is a lifecycle block. Then you can tell it to create before delete. And what that means is if you have a service, like in this case, our network endpoint group, for which we want to change the backend service and have that applied to the backend as the backend part there, it would say create that network endpoint group first and then apply it to the backend and then delete the old one. But what further compounds the problem is that every resource has a unique name attached to it. So we can't create a new, we can't update the existing resource. We technically have to create a new resource, have that applied, and delete it. So I figured out a way of doing it. And Terraform conditionals are freaking crazy, right? It's kind of not very intuitive compared to other languages that you might be familiar with. So got that all figured out and applied it. And this was like around 3:00. And I was surprised that it worked. And I was so excited. I'm like, and by working, I mean Terraform, we have Scalar that applies to Terraform. It didn't error out. So I go over and I look into the on the Google UI for the URL, the load balancer, and look at the URL map and the backends and everything and make sure that it did what I expected it to do. Now, generally, when you look at this, you are presented with, you know, at the top, the URL map, and then it's got a path. It's like a static listing of the paths that are mapped to what backends, and then all the backends are listed underneath it. And what was presented to me was a map of nothing. The map was gone. There were no maps anymore. All our mapping was gone. And I looked at this, and then I looked over at our staging environment, and the map's there, but the development environment, the map's not there. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, how did it delete everything, given the fact that every time we've tried to delete one thing, and I was only working with one back end, not all of them, but I was only working with one. I'm like, how the hell did it manage to just wipe out all the back ends and not complain? Like, the back ends were there, but the URL mapping, it was gone. And so I spent the next hour stepping through everything that I did, walking it back one at a time until I got back to the original implementation. And nothing brought the URL map back. And I'm like confused as hell as to what's going on. So I contacted the other guy I work with who set up the new way of doing all the Terraform. We're both looking at this and we're scratching our heads and everything. And then he's like, well, wait a minute. Are you sure it's not working? And I'm like, well, how can it work? The URL map isn't here anymore. So he tests and he's like, it's working. And I'm like, how could it possibly be working if the URL map's gone? And so we're looking at it. He's like, look over there in the right-hand corner. It looks like there's an arrow, a drop-down arrow. So I click that drop-down arrow, and all of a sudden, the URL map is there, but it's in a completely different format than it was in any other of our projects. So Google Cloud Services, it's all by projects. So we have three projects, development, staging, and production. I'm looking at development, and then I go over to staging, completely different UI layout for displaying the URL map. So I'm like, in the process of me making my changes, somehow their UI completely changed on how this stuff is displayed. And I have no idea how it happened. And it was like a waste of like 2 hours of work trying to figure this out, what had happened, when in actuality, the only thing that happened is their UI changed. And why it changed, I have no idea. We couldn't figure that out. Now, I talked to another guy. I said, you're not going to believe this. I just spent 2 hours pounding my head against what happened here. And I'm like, I showed him the exact same thing that I saw when I first looked at this. And I said, but it's here. Compare this UI, same page, but in a different project, completely different. Why is the layout completely different? He's like, yeah, that happens sometimes. I had that happen to me. Like, Google has updated something, but that update in the UI doesn't take effect until you make some kind of change to the service, and then all of a sudden you get this like brand new UI, which is completely different than what you're used to. So really,
typical Google.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell? And I'm like, but it's not really that much of an update or an upgrade, because the UI is less intuitive now than it was before. And we were commiserating about that. It's like, yeah, it kind of is more geared to somebody who is like doing this stuff manually, not like how we do it through automated scripts and Terraform and stuff like that. It's more because you could look at it, it's like a YAML presentation of it, and there's a little copy that you could actually copy this out, make changes to it, and then manually push it back up there through some of their cloud services commands. But it was very extremely frustrating, given the fact that we've had to jump through so many hoops to get this thing, the damn thing, to work. But so then, you know, that's what we found ultimately at the end of the day to resolve our problem, being able to change the back end. We have to actually deploy a new network endpoint group with a different name, and then with that lifecycle rule in there, it will switch the back end to that, and then it's able to delete the old network endpoint group afterwards. So it creates that new one first, switches the back end to use that, and then deletes the old one. And you don't have any problems after that. It's kind of odd, because it would be nice if you could just like swap out the back end on a network endpoint group, but it won't let you do that because it kind of like it won't update it. It does a recreates it, and when it recreates it, it has to recreate the back end, and so it really causes a lot of problems with that order right there. Real stick in the ass, Dave. You know what I'm saying?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, and what makes it challenging is like every change that I have to make, it's like I got to go into the Terraform file, I got to update the Terraform, I got to push that up as a pull request to GitHub. It has to go through the scaler to do the dry run testing, and that takes like a few minutes, 3 to 5 minutes. And then once that's done, I have to merge it in. And then it has to go through a planning phase, which is another like 2 minutes. And then I have to apply it, which is another 2 to 5 minutes. And then I have to test it. And then I have to figure, you know, it's that. It's like everything takes like 10 to 15 minutes. And on top, oh, here's another thing that bit me. Ooh, did another. I got a lot of bitching to go on tonight. So
I got some too.
In the middle of while I'm all doing this, one of the other guys I work with hits me up. He's like, can you figure out why our story editor integration tests, none of them are working anymore, right? They're all failing. Every single one of our tests are failing. This is our WordPress thing. So I go over and, what's nice about it is that Cypress will, which we're using for integration testing, will do a screen capture of its progress. And so once the workflow is complete, if something has failed, you can download the artifacts. And those artifacts are screen captures. They're MP4 files. So you pull them up, and it shows you the whole thing that it did with the interface. And I see that they're all failing at the point where it goes to log in. With our test accounts. And I knew right away, I pretty much knew right away when he said they were all failing, and I took a look at it, and I'm like, I think I know exactly what this is. We had, we're in the process of switching away from Okta to Entra, and I'm like, and I noticed this week when our accounts were switched over, that when I go log into Okta like I usually do, it redirects to Entra, and now I can't use my Google Authenticator because it's not set up for Entra. So it texts me, and I'm like, okay. So then I'm like, I know exactly what's going on. They switched these accounts over to Entra, and now it wants to do a multi-factor authentication, which these accounts didn't have set up for them because they're testing and automating accounts. We can't do the MFA. There's no way to do that. So luckily, it was an easy fix once we got a hold of security and they were able to adjust those accounts for us, and it worked out just fine. But what frosts my Pop-Tart is that I have all my MFA stuff set up under Google Authenticator for work, and Entra will only work with Microsoft Authenticator.
Of course.
Right? And that just, like, it pisses me off. Like,
right.
So the only option, like, I have options. It'll either text me a code, or it'll email me a code. Or I could use Google Authenticator, and I don't. Not Google. I mean Microsoft Authenticator, and I don't want to install Microsoft Authenticator on my phone.
Well, this is where you go to work. Say, I need a work phone.
I don't want a work phone. I had a work phone. That was a pain in the ass. I hate having two phones.
You know the best part. I do too. But the best part of it is when I'm not on call, that fucker stays in my office. That's why I like it.
It doesn't matter to me because if I'm on call, I'm on call all the time. So when they want to get a hold of me, they got my phone number. So that and I just
that's your fault.
Yeah, that's my fault. Yeah, there we go. But I don't get called very often. But when I do, I drink a Dos Equis right away, and I say, "Let's go." But yeah, I'm not happiness this week. Not happy, but It was fun doing this stuff, though. I learned a lot. Still learning a lot. And that's always important.
Here is something I was dealing with today. Well, we've been dealing with it for a while. Some brainiac on the engineering team decides that they're going to write a monitor that looks in our UI and self-service configurations to look for a clock skew of 60 seconds. That's what they want to see. And if it doesn't see 60 seconds, then it's going to create an incident and it's going to come towards us. All right. Well, the problem is that isn't what's recommended for our product. What we recommend is 300 seconds for the clock skew. That's literally in several different knowledge articles and everything. And not to mention the fact, if you go and look up Kerberos default, you know, what it suggests as a default for a clock skew, you know, for time clock skew, it's, guess what? 300 seconds.
300 seconds or milliseconds?
100 seconds, 300 seconds.
300 seconds. That's like, yep. What, 5 minutes, 6 minutes?
It's 5 minutes. Five minutes. See, and the whole reason that is because here's what can happen is, and this is for SAML authentication, okay? So we have a server that stands that when you first access our application, it's going to hit that server first, then it's going to direct it to the client's IDP. That client's IDP could be Google, it could be Okta, it could be whatever. You know, I think we have ADFS and we have Azure, you know, or AKA Entra or whatever you want to call it. All right. Well, the problem is you do not know in that string of servers that you're hitting, be it our server, their server, or back to our server, that the time difference can be drastic depending on who you're talking about, right? How can I guarantee what Microsoft's Entra is set up for clock skew wise? You can't. Or what their clock is. I can't tell what their clock is. This is why we have 300 seconds. All right, which seems excessive, but it really isn't. In the grand scheme of things, there could be that much difference between our servers, which are all synchronized, right, and Microsoft servers or somebody else's, and this is why you have it. And they think it's, and the other team thinks, well, that's excessive. 60 seconds is more than enough, and over that, that's a security risk. I'm like, look up your documentation, please.
So
talk to the people that actually do this stuff for a living.
Was it a problem? Has it been a problem though? When they switched it, did you run into an actual problem resulting from that?
Well, it basically triggers off an incident that our team has to either redirect to their team or
resolve. It is triggering incidents because
yes.
Other people's time on their servers is off by more than 60 seconds.
Well, no, this is just checking the configuration. It's not actually doing anything. It checks the configuration. If it doesn't see 60, it's going to say, oh, I'm going to trigger an incident. Never mind that my team has already gone through and fixed almost every client because they were having issues. You know, it's like they didn't talk to people. They just, and not to mention the fact, they bring out this new monitor that triggers incidents that come to my team, and I'm like, what the hell? Would you ever think about having a turnover so that we knew? Or whatever? Did you ever decide to talk to anybody? You know, my boss is dealing with it. So, but we had in the middle of all that, guess what, of course, was down? And I actually put the article in the Mumble and in the RRC. Zoom was down for 2 hours today.
It was?
It was. Now, when? It was today around it was fixed by 4:12 p.m.
That's weird because I was on Zoom all day today.
Here's the weird thing. So was I. I had a call scheduled with a client that they're going to be out tomorrow and Friday because they're a Catholic school. All right. So I was trying to get something squared away with him, and I had this call scheduled at 4 o'clock. All right, and I joined the Zoom. My coworker in Mexico joins the Zoom. All right, they couldn't. They were getting DNS failures, and that's what it looks like. This was that the Zoom.us domain was expired for. Well, actually, on the server hold briefly. So now me and my boss and the other lead, we're all trying to circle the wagons to build up our case for talking to this other team, and their manager who by the way is a not brand new manager to the company, but they moved them around, all right. So they're under a different management. Not to mention the fact this guy actually knows colleague. So, which is the ERP, primary ERP I work on. But so it's like we're trying to talk, and we're like, we ended up doing a Slack huddle, which is very similar to Zoom or, God forbid, Teams. That's what I had to, we followed back to Teams for the client that I needed to talk to today because they weren't going to be in the rest of the week. So I'm expecting the rest of the week to be closed. But here's something else, too, that I dealt with today. Was it today or yesterday? I can't remember. I think it was today. So one of our clients has had pretty bad experience lately. And we finally got the right teams together to help improve their experience. And they've been having probably one of the most successful registrations they've had since they came to cloud. Okay. Well, they decide, like, 6 o'clock in the morning, we're going to switch our firewall out on a week when their registration. And guess what happened?
Shit went sideways.
Of course. So, you know, and they're creating cases and incidents and stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, it never failed from our side. Almost never. I mean, there was one or two failures, okay? But then we go in and look at the their connection to our site-to-site VPN, and one of their connections was completely down, and I'm like, uh-oh. And they said this yesterday at like 4 o'clock that they were going to do that, and I'm like, okay, they're in registration week. Why the hell are they doing that? Click, click, boom, shot your own foot off, man. I'm like, and I ain't saying who, but it's just like, you know, what position? It's like, well, see, you're USA Today mostly, right?
Yes. Well, okay. Well, I mean, we're all the papers all the, associated with the Gannett company.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like. If you decided to do major change on election night, you'd have never done that.
No, there's a code freeze the week before that.
I was going to say, I mean, it's like, you know, oh, but anywho, but on the lighter news, I got my next pair of trail runners from Amazon today. And I haven't worn them. I'm gonna do a break in probably tomorrow, at boot camp. But I got some Ultra Lone Peak 9s in an olive cut, it's like an olive green color. But so I put them things on just to try them on after work. Damn, they were so much more comfortable than my old pair. My old pair's not wore out yet. I can probably go longer, but they changed the design between the version 7 that I have and the version 9. So I think the new ones have a tiny bit, either they have a tiny bit more padding or my feet are just stronger. Plus, when I bought those ones too, I bought them probably half size up. Maybe a whole size up. But since I lost a lot of weight, my feet have kind of shrank a little bit. So whereas I'd probably last year this time I probably would have ordered 11s, and this year I ran 10 and a half, and I had plenty of room in the front. So I used to have to buy wide sneakers. Now I don't. So, because I'm down to, I'm up a little bit. But I think part of that's because I just have been focused on the amount of protein that I eat per day. I eat 170 grams of protein per day. And last night, I did a full upper body workout, so I gained a little bit. Because I'm really pushing the extra, as much weight as I can, trying to get myself stronger. Mostly because I want to get the upper body strong enough so I can pull myself up the rock climbs. Well, they're not rock climbs, but like the hill climbs, you know. So, because there's some pretty significant hills. And then after I did my weights yesterday, I got on a treadmill for about 20 minutes. And for the first 15 of that, I did 15% incline for 15 minutes solid at my hiking pace. So I'm getting better slowly but surely.
Good for you, Joe.
I'm excited.
I'll be right back. I gotta go see.
Yep. And my son's car this week is in the shop. Because he's getting damage fixed from when he hit a dog.
Yeah.
About a week, week or two ago? Yeah. About $1,100 damage. Yay, me. I hope my insurance doesn't go up, though.
How old is he?
26.
It might not go up too much.
Well,
$125 probably.
And honestly, $1,100 is a light hit. I mean,
oh yeah.
So I mean, that's not that bad when you consider what it costs these days. Or like, for example, for me, I this morning I had an oil change schedule, so I grabbed the work laptop and headed to the car dealership because I have they gave me an oil change package, so I have at least one or two more oil changes that I don't have to pay for. And I go in there, and of course they do the diagnostic and say, hey, you need a new battery. I'm like, how much does that cost? $330. I'm like, ouch. Okay. Let's do it, because I don't want to get stranded nowhere. And my wife's like, well, I think you could get it cheaper elsewhere. I'm like, honey, car batteries don't just cost $80 like they used to anymore, especially if you got a newer vehicle.
Not running a hybrid though, it should cost between $90 and $150.
Yeah,
I did a quick Google before I said yes, and the average range on my car is 240 to 340.
Okay,
actually 350, I should say 350, and it was 340 before tax, 350 after tax. Yeah, I probably could have saved like $50, but it honestly wasn't gonna be that big a deal. You know,
then
so
you got
like,
somebody else to do the work.
Exactly.
No, because so, I just replaced the battery in my Buick, which is an old Buick.
Right.
It only cost me about $90.
Yeah, they say, I'm trying to remember, I think they have different kinds of batteries than the old school 12-volt batteries.
Probably.
So, I mean, because everything, you got to think about this. There's 10, how old's your Buick?
2001.
Okay, there's probably 10 times more modules in my 2020.
Probably like 100 times more modules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, because you gotta have sensors for, well, you got to consider I have 360 cams. So
and the touchscreen display.
Touchscreen display. You got sensors for the ABS. You've got speed sensors for adaptive cruise.
Auto drive.
It doesn't have auto drive, but
you got adaptive cruise. That's close enough.
Yeah, it's very close to that. Yeah, I mean, the car will slow down for me. Once I'm on the highway, I can just leave it in the cruise. So now,
I love adaptive cruise, and I use it in the city.
I do too. I do too.
Yeah, it's to me. It's it, it keeps you a safe distance. I mean,
it does.
My wife in Dallas, no one else knows what a safe distance is.
This is true.
Yeah.
So if you leave like half a car length in front of between you and the person in front of you, like three people are jumping in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no good in Atlanta or Dallas either, evidently. But
yeah, I don't think people here actually understand what braking distance is.
Yeah.
Joe, check out that recipe I put in the Rumble chat.
I will in a few minutes.
It is for a protein-packed breakfast casserole.
Cool. I can always use another breakfast recipe. It
says 8 eggs, egg white, extra egg whites, cottage cheese, low-fat feta, spinach, cherry tomatoes, onion.
Is this a meal prep?
You could. I mean,
8 eggs, that sounds like more than one meal to me.
Well, yeah, it's 6 servings. So, red onion, deli turkey breast, garlic powder, black pepper, salt, and olive oil. That all sounds delicious. I like cottage cheese.
Cottage cheese works well in a lot of recipes, especially if you get the low-fat stuff.
And one serving here on the macros. Let's see. I got to scroll down. 29 grams of protein, 224 calories. That ain't bad. That's a pretty damn good. And that's real protein. First Form posted that. My first thought was, "Oh, it's gonna have some sort of powder in it." No, it doesn't have any powder. I thought that's what I thought at first, but no.
Protein powder is still real protein.
Oh, I know. I'm really wanting to get a creamy so bad now, though.
Oh, dude, I love my creamy. I'm just waiting for some freezer space to clear up, and I'm gonna make 8 more.
Cause in my team call for First Form, in the Zoom chat, we were chatting about different things, and I said, wait a minute, I got a brilliant idea. Make a protein ice cream with our powder, right? Take that protein bar, the level 1 bar, and cut that sucker up and sprinkle it on top of the ice cream. Dude.
No, you use it in the mix-in setting.
Or that,
You take it, you split it in half. You break it up one half a little bit, and you put it in the mix-in setting, and then the other half, you crumble it over the top of it.
Absolutely. Dude. Absolutely. Although, one of our bars is about 240 to 270.
Well, it's not a protein bar, but there's this 100-calorie Reese's bar. I use that quite frequently
the protein
in
one?
My ice cream.
The protein one ones? Because I've seen those.
Oh, no. This is just Reese's. I said it's not a protein bar.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I got some Easter information for you protein heads. One, Reese's peanut butter egg has 4 grams of protein. There's your justification.
Yeah, but it's got it's 300 not a lot. Calories.
No. They're 140.
And how many grams of protein?
4 grams. I know. You can do better.
4? Yeah. Yeah,
you could do way better.
Yeah, that's a little rough. Not that I'm not going to eat them anyway, but
exactly. I had one today with my salad. Oh, my salad! I'm so hooked on that. This I need to find a different recipe, but the last 2 weeks I've ate this salad. It's got kale, shredded chicken. A roasted sweet potato, and then you make a peanut dressing. The recipe for the peanut dressing, I actually made the dressing for the first time last couple weeks. I basically took peanut sauce and another dressing and mixed it together, which actually was pretty good too. But I made it at home this week, and instead of using the recipe called for peanut butter, I'm trying to remember, maybe a quarter cup of smooth peanut butter. I tried it with PB Fit, and it was a little runny, but it worked. It worked.
Well, you get to control how thick
this is
PB
true.
Fit is.
Yeah, I can put more powder in it. Yeah, but it came out good. I kind of want to do something else though, so I don't, you know, I'm granted kale's really healthy for you. And if, as long as you have it with other stuff, it actually doesn't taste that bad.
It's a little salty.
Yep. But yeah, the dressing was like peanut butter, soy sauce, which you can go with a low sodium soy sauce, lime juice, and garlic, I think. And that kind of makes a really good taste. I liked it. And then you top it with chopped up peanuts. So if you like Thai, I adore Thai food. Especially things like pad Thai. But that's what I made. And I have plenty of shredded chicken because I got Sam's Club. Have you ever tried, they have this shredded chicken in the deli. It's so good, man.
I have not tried it. I might have to.
Yeah, it's really good. It's already shredded. Is the price good? I have to look. Let me see if I can look it up on their website rather than on my phone. It's smoked, too, so it's got a little smokiness to it.
I mean, I'm willing to try it. I got a Sam's membership.
Yeah, I go to Sam's every freaking week.
And I do like buying my stuff in bulk.
I like every once in a while, I like buying one of their deli chickens. Their deli. My dad actually, where he works, at Sam's Club and he makes the chicken. Seasoned pulled chicken. It's 2 pounds. $13.98. And I still have plenty of chicken left.
$7 a pound? That seems a bit steep.
Yeah, it's pre-cooked, though.
Yeah.
You could always get out the green egg and make your own, but...
True. I make a lot of actual, like, well, pulled chicken, essentially. Shredded chicken.
I might try taking some of that. There's a link for it. I might try taking some of that and microwave it till it's hot and then take get some of that G Hughes low sugar barbecue sauce.
Those are good.
And kick it up a notch, put a little hot sauce in it too. I love me hot sauce. All kinds.
Kinder.
Real mild one that tastes really good is the Cholula green one. I love
Kinder.
It's got, what'd you say?
Kinder has a really good sugar-free jalapeno that I can't find anymore.
I have to look for that. I know the one. I'm trying to think of it. I think it might be already gone, but at Sam's Club they had a cherry cola rub. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think, what the hell would I use it for? I guess you could use it on pork or even beef. It probably would work on that.
Oh, just toss it in your oatmeal. It'll be fine.
Yeah, put Robitussin on it, get the same flavor.
Oh, come on, man. let me guess, you don't like Dr. Pepper either.
I used to. I quit liking Dr. Pepper in my 20s.
Dr. Pepper is delicious.
I have one right here.
I'm drinking a Diet Dr. Pepper right now. I noticed now for a while, like for about 2-3 weeks, I couldn't get any of the Cherry Zero Dr. Pepper.
And then finally, a couple of new flavors, the blackberry.
The blackberry's good. I don't know if it's as good as strawberry, though.
And the strawberry cream is good.
But the they changed the coloring on the cherry used to be like a dark greenish blue color, both on the can and on the packaging. Well, the last two I bought, the packaging was the old color, but inside the cans were bright red. And I'm trying to figure out if it tastes different than it used to. I can't really tell. But that's one of my favorite Dr. Peppers. Among the, now, what's funny is I'll get the regular diet instead of the zero. Because I prefer the regular diet with the regular Dr. Pepper. Of course, I've been drinking that for years. So, and I got me some more Element coming. I get that about every 2 weeks. Nice to have something other than pop in my mini fridge.
This seems like a really good deal. You're going to have to check it out. Just sent the link.
What?
I just sent the link.
Okay.
It looks like a 15U, 20U.
Rack.
Server rack.
I don't need a rack.
$25 well, the best offer. I could
yeah.
use that. Oh, yeah.
I don't need a rack, but at
well, actually, I don't have a full-size rack or a full-width rack. Well, that's my mini rack.
Not to mention the fact you don't even have to have servers that'll mount in that one because that's got
right?
shelves
got,
on it.
It's already got four shelves included. Those the shelves for these things are like 50, 60 bucks each.
Yeah.
I'll offer the guy 20.
Heck, he might... I don't know. Well, he probably could get more from it for scrap, depending on what it's made out of.
It looks like it's made out of a lower grade
probably
aluminum.
Yeah.
Are you saying not tonight just because you're on medication from the root canal?
That is correct. Because my head is pounding.
Yeah.
Because I just had a root canal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That sucks.
Hmm. It does suck. But this has been on here for 2 days already? It'll probably still be here tomorrow. Yeah. There was a nice one that was up for like free that I saw while I was at work and figured I'd message the guy after work. Yeah,
already gone.
It was gone.
Damn.
You ever do that MacBid thing?
Mac what thing?
MacBid. I think it's MacBid.
My
daughter does it, and it's evidently returned Amazon items.
My brother has recommended an application that he says he gets most of his cool stuff from, called Whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah, Whatnot.com.
I think MacBid is solely returned Amazon items, but you have to go to like a distribution center to pick them up, I think, but they're you bid on them, so you know you can get them pretty cheap.
Oh, I've seen some of those centers where you can like walk in and pay for a pallet.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a couple of those around here. Pay for a pallet of returns and whatever you get, you get. Which I guess could be cool.
So that rack holds blade servers?
Yeah.
And how many blade servers do you have?
One.
And how many will you get after this rack?
Well, I would probably... See, that's one of the reasons I haven't gotten one yet, because I know it'd be a money sink, because I'd end up getting like either a 3U or a 4U ATX case and moving my main PC into it. And then I'd want to get some adapter brackets to move some of my half-width stuff onto it. So that way I could, you know, put them side by side and mount them on there. And then I'd probably end up buying more crap off of Facebook Marketplace to put in there. But $25 is hard to argue with.
You know what? I have a question, though. How much does the server, the rack, the server you have weigh?
The little mini one?
Yeah. The one that you would put in this rack. The blade that you would put in.
That thing is fucking heavy as fuck. Yeah. I'd have to definitely put it at the bottom. And it would probably stick the fuck out the back.
I was just wondering, because I remember when we got some... I don't know if you got one of those, Joel. Alan and I did. We got some racks from Link. Some rack servers. And those things were they were heavy as hell.
I might even have to take the damn wheels off.
Well before I moved, I had one... And I drove my wife batshit crazy because I set it up downstairs in the laundry room, and that fucker was loud.
Yeah, and heavy.
That's one of my concerns, that it's going to be loud as fuck, and I'm not going to want to use it because of it.
Yeah, my youngest daughter used to sleep in this room before my oldest one got married and moved out. And this is the room with the rack server and another server, but it's loud and hot in this room, but she lived in here for 6 or 8 years this way.
Damn, man. You made your daughter sleep in your server room?
You call it white noise, man.
Yeah. She got used to it.
Yeah, it reminds me of back in that day when you had all them sunboxes, and one of the most fun devices I ever had back then was that NSLU2. Remember that thing?
The sunbox? Yeah.
No, Linksys NSLU2 or the Slug.
Yeah, the little device. Hook the hard drive to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. And you could hack it and run Linux on it.
Oh, I thought you were talking about rack servers.
No.
I thought you were talking about those, because I had a couple of Sun. Did you have a Sun box, Dave?
I did. I had a Spark.
Yeah, pizza boxes.
Yeah, I had a couple of those. You know what was bad about those?
That's my first web server, was that Spark machine.
What was bad about those is if you had the monitor that it came with it, oh my god, that thing was
I had that.
I don't know how they made a monitor weigh as much as an air conditioning unit at that size would weigh. It was terrible.
It was enormous.
Yeah, and.
Ooh. I don't miss CRTs at all.
No, I don't miss them either. Oh, man.
One thing that is annoying, though, because I have random, you know, especially since we've been taking some on-prem cases, too, so we're doing a lot more Zoom work. And when somebody you're Zooming with has one of those wide-ass monitors... You know the ones I'm talking about, the white curved ones.
And they share the screen.
And it's fucking microscopic.
Yeah.
Ugh. So you have to turn on zoom feature, and then you're scrolling around. It's like, oh my god.
Tell them to increase the font size.
Well.
Well, I got the five households that I share my media server with all migrated to Jellyfin successfully, and everybody's using it, and nobody's complaining.
Do they even know, other than you said,
they have to use another app, and you log in.
Yes.
So.
Nice.
What are you going to put on that server there?
Everything is on. Oh,
what are you gonna put on? Well, I know you. You probably have just Debian on all your servers.
Probably Proxmox, OpenWRT, a couple of Mint VMs, maybe a Windows VM. The usual stuff.
How much RAM does it have?
What the server that I shared? The one that I shared to you guys, I looked at a couple of them today. Oh, no. The only thing I sent was the rack.
Yeah, I thought you said you had a Blade server.
I do. Well, it's a SAS array. I don't know how much of anything it has. in it. I'd have to pull it back out and take another look. I've never even hooked it up. Somebody gave it to me to hold on to.
And they disappeared?
And then they disappeared. Hold on.
What were they doing with it?
Nothing. It was... They were like, I'm not doing anything with this. And I was like, I might be able to find something to do with it for a while. And they're like, okay, hold on to it for me. And then they switched jobs, and I never saw them again. Dell Equalogic PSX 500. It is a beast. It is freaking heavy. It's got three power supplies coming out the back here. A bunch of Ethernet connections. I'm going to have to really look into this.
Was that an MSX?
PSX 500.
Oh.
That sounds loud.
Oh, I bet it is. It's freaking huge, dude. And it's like 120 pounds, maybe? I don't know. I don't know how much it is. It's a lot.
Does anybody still make workstations nowadays? Like the old Linux, Unix ones, like Spark?
Mm-hmm. Are you asking if they still make Spark things?
Spark servers.
What did SunOS become? Or they just switched to Linux?
PS6500.
That's a good question. Oh, wait, what's this? Oh, you get hit. Boy, that didn't take long. Brave New World is already available to rent on Google TV.
I thought you were talking. You were answering my question about
when, no, sorry.
What is Sun? I thought SunOS went to they moved it. They discontinued Solaris? It, didn't they? Solaris. They discontinued that, and then.
Let me see.
Yeah, I think they just went away, but I don't know.
48 hot pluggable 3.5-inch SATA and SAS drives.
It's Oracle Solaris, man, because Oracle owns them.
That's a lot of drives.
That is a lot of drives.
Yeah, Solaris still exists. You can download Oracle Solaris today.
Still run CDE?
You betcha, it probably is. CDE is so fucking ugly.
Solaris 11. Is it free?
Isn't it's not Solaris open source. Dead? No, 11.4 is the latest. Is it x86 though? Oh yeah, must be. Creates CDs, DVDs, or populate a USB drive with these images. Interesting. But 11.4 came out in 2018, by the looks of it.
Their documentation page for Solaris? It isn't working for me or something. It says, go to the Solaris 11.4 information library. Oh, here we go. Now it's working. Huh.
Okay. Looking at this page, it says it weighs 165 pounds.
Oh. Well, yeah, I know you could lift it.
I can lift it. That doesn't mean I want to be lugging it around.
Truth.
I don't think that rack's going to hold it, though.
No.
It would definitely stick out the back, that's for sure. It says it'll run Linux on it. or Oracle Linux is what it says how that it was old? Built for. So I don't know how old this thing is. It's not new, that's for sure. I'm not even sure if it's the X, the E, or the ES. And I'm definitely not sure what freaking processor it has in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. You know what?
What?
Let me double check something here. That 11.4 version of Solaris may have been released in 2011. Let me see.
I don't know anybody uses it anymore.
Oh, I stand corrected. 11 was released in 2011. 11.4 was released in 2018.
Right.
So, damn, that's old.
Mm-hmm. You know what releases tomorrow?
Ubuntu.
Ubuntu?
That's correct.
25.4. What is it, 425? How did they do that?
2504.
25, that's right, 2504. Damn. What's new?
The Plucky Puffin.
What's new in Ubuntu?
You got Linux kernel 6.14, GNOME 48, Mesa 25, Python 3.13.
So it's basically just updated software. There's nothing like.
Yeah, well,
not trying anything different in this release.
Yes and no, but they've actually updated the installer.
Oh, really?
Got some improvements in the installer.
Well, how could they improve a perfect installer?
I don't know. Toolchain updates to Python, Go, Rust, and LLVM. They also have you know how your phone has a wellness feature, right? Well, they've added that to Ubuntu.
Good gracious!
How does it know?
I don't know. It must track how long you're on it.
Oh, you mean, I thought you meant like a hardware wellness thing.
No,
I thought that's you wellness.
Yeah, I didn't. No. I'm thinking about my phone and stuff like that. I'm like,
no.
I don't really know my phone's. I mean, is there a diagnostic app that tells me the wellness of my phone? I bet you there is something, maybe.
There probably is, but this is more like, hey, you're using your phone too much.
Which, okay, I'm like,
yeah, it ain't gonna work with me.
Smart's
the hard drives, right?
Hey, what is the protocol for system, like monitoring system hardware?
I forget. Some
protocol for that.
Digital well-being is what they call the controls.
Yeah, what is that called, Dan?
Dave, I'm asking you, man. Why are you asking me?
Because it's on the tip of my tongue, just like it is yours.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. Yeah, they added HDR support, so HDR screens are now supported.
SNMP.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wait.
No. You're right. No, that's right. That's right.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm talking about, like, isn't there a protocol that, like, it'll collect temperature data and CPU?
SNMP.
Does SNMP? I thought maybe it's not a protocol, but I thought there was some like SMART D. There was something else. Or are you thinking SNMP, Dave?
I think that's what I was thinking.
Important for new people or newer hardware, Ubuntu now supports the Intel Arc GPU. And They're also making some significant improvements on the arm side of things because there's a plethora of Snapdragon-based laptops now, some from Microsoft, some others like Lenovo and so on and so forth. And, of course, you want to run the Ubuntu on those too, right?
Wait, is the Steam Deck ARM-based or is it strictly Intel?
I think so. I think it's ARM, right? Isn't it, Joe? I don't have one. Joe does.
I haven't checked.
Ain't gonna lie, I kind of want one of those gaming handhelds now.
There's some interesting ones.
Like, I'm looking at MSI Claw. I kind of like that one.
AMD APU based on Zen 2 and RDNA 2 architectures.
For the Steam Deck?
Yeah.
It's x86. It's not ARM-based.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to say, I thought that there might be a real big problem with trying to run a lot of, like, games.
Right.
That haven't been specifically ported.
That's like, true. That's true. Particularly
those that need to go through Proton.
Right.
And that's... I can't imagine the work has been done to translate that to ARM-based calls. I wonder how challenging that would be. I mean, couldn't you just recompile it for the ARM architecture?
Would you have to recompile every game?
Yeah, you might. So Ubuntu 25.04 has generic ARM64 ISO, supports a wide range of ARM hardware and setups, including VMs, devices with HCPI plus EFI, existing Snapdragon Windows on ARM laptops, and notably newer Snapdragon X Elite laptops, often marketed as Copilot plus AI PCs.
Even bigger Linux distro news, Commodore OS was supposed to be released yesterday, but they pushed it out to April 22nd.
Commodore
OS is a Linux-based distro that runs on Commodore 64 computers. It's evidently been around. It's been around for, I think, 33 years, and they haven't a release. It was supposed to be yesterday, but it's been pushed to April 22nd. Commodore OS 3.0.
Wait, has Commodore OS always been Linux based?
I don't think so. I think this is a fan made OS.
No. I meant the thing that you're talking about.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Because I was going to say, if it's 33 years old, that predates Linux, doesn't it? Or I should say that was 1991 that the kernel. I mean, Torvalds released the first version of the kernel.
Yeah, I think version one of the kernel was 94 or something like that. But
so I'm like thinking 33 years ago, that was like what?
Yeah, it's not always 87. And it may not be 33 years old. I saw this in my news feed, and I deleted the feed, but I looked it up on Google.
Is that why you deleted it, because you saw that? You saw it was Commodore and screwed up?
No, I read them all, and I deleted them all. But this is CommodoreOS.net.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't find a history of the OS, but I want to say this is really old, but it may not be. But the updates only go back to 2023, I think.
Now, so that reminds me, have you seen the Commander X16 hardware?
No.
Okay, to give you a little background, the guy, the 8-bit guy, David Murray, all right, he and a few of his friends, they went and they built their dream 8-bit computer. And it's called the Commander X16.
Dave, here it is.
Okay, I got it wrong.
Here it is. It was pushed back to the 22nd, but Commodore OS Vision 3.0 is a fan-made Commodore-inspired Linux distribution based on Debian Bookworm.
Yeah.
Which serves as the default installation for Commodore branded machines such as the Commodore 64X.
Gotcha.
Available from myretrocomputer.com. So it's a futuristic vision of what Commodore might have produced in an alternate timeline. So the Commodore 64X is that, I guess it's that, it's that small computer board, whatever, that's running Linux and emulating Commodore 64.
I fell for a sensational headline, evidently.
And that's the OS it runs. It runs that dev. It, no, you didn't fall. Come on, Dave. You didn't fall for a sensationalist headline. You fell for. you were. It was a legitimate release. It's just the headline didn't give you all the information.
Okay.
There you go. So now we know how Dave gets all his news. It's just the headline. That's why he likes an RSS reader.
Right.
Just gives him the headline.
So he is the kind of guy that would put the whole email in the subject line.
Yeah.
You ever met people like that? They're paying
in the
ass.
Didn't Rich used to do that?
Yes.
It sounds like something he did.
Yes.
Because he's lazy.
Damn.
Yeah.
I should start Debian again. Huh?
God, it's been forever. Yeah, our insurance company gave my son a Chrysler Pacifica to drive while his car's getting fixed from the dog hit.
Did you ever find out if the dog died?
No.
How much is insurance covering the cost of the repair?
The repair? Well, yeah. Yeah, it's a claim. $1,100.
That's before deductible or after deductible?
No, that's before. $500 deductible, so okay. It's costing me $500.
Not too bad.
But my insurance company was like, did you get the dog's owner's information? Because we can go after them for your deductible. I'm like, dude, really? I'm like, I probably, if they tried to keep that dog alive, probably cost him much more than it cost to fix my car. Because vets ain't cheap.
Oh, no.
They might have just put a bullet in that dog's head. They, you know, they might.
Listen to you, Kirsten Gnome over there.
I'm like, you know what? No, they didn't.
Wait, Dave, did you say they should have they might have?
No, I said they might have. You don't know. You don't know they spent a lot of money to keep it alive. They might have just said
$80, kill it.
It is Ohio, so there you go. Joel, you should have just told the insurance company it was just a hit and run. With the dog. It was a hit. No. And then they'd be like, you heartless bastard. You sure you don't know the owner's name? We can go after them.
I mean, it's what the lady on the phone said, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me, right? I'm like, good God.
Hey, they need to recoup their money somehow, right?
I know.
Now, if they would have gone after them, would you still have to pay the deductible?
Yeah. But they would have got it back, and they would have got it back.
Like, how do you benefit in any of that?
Yeah, I don't know.
It wouldn't have had to pay the $500 on top of the deductible.
No, I'd pay the deductible. Then, if the insurance company got the money back, then they would compensate me.
Oh, so they would.
That's way my insurance. Yeah,
they would.
I'd get the money back.
Oh, there you go.
But it's like the time.
So you sold for that $500.
He had a person that didn't have car insurance or a license hit him. It's like, God.
But that'd be the thing. Like, Joel would like give him the information, get his $500 back, and then he's up at the pearly gates of heaven, and
there's St. Peter with the dog right there on a leash. I'm like, remember this guy?
Jeez.
Straight to hell.
God don't work that way, man.
Dog anyway. On your leg as you're going down.
Dog was $500.
Did you ask God if he works that way? Did he tell you?
Yes, he did. I study. Anywho. Oh, yeah. You know what size pants I bought last week?
Three.
36.
36. Wow.
36 man. Inches.
Good for you, sir.
From 50 to 36 inches.
Dadgum.
I know, right? Yeah, I was sitting there. I took my work laptop with me to get my car oil change done and then battery replaced. I'm sitting there, and this guy who we bought it off of, he's like, "Oh, hey, how are you doing? I finally recognized you." I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Did you lose a little weight?" I said, "A little bit, a little bit." Every once in a while, I'll be sitting there, and I'm like, you know, I feel so damn good, you know. It's like I went for a run on the treadmill. I get off that treadmill. I felt so good. And I'm like, it used to hurt to get off that treadmill. But now I'm like, it's nothing. You know, it's like, you know, I did about 2.45 miles in 30 minutes, which is doing good for me.
That's great, man. That is great.
So, yeah, I ran solid 10 minutes before I took a slow down a little bit. I did that at 5.4 mile an hour on the treadmill. It's wacky weather. I just wish it would just stay dry and warmer. But, like, overnight goes down into the 30s or the 40s.
That's what I hate about spring.
But... And we had so much rain. Oh, my God, we had so much rain. We had so much rain. I almost thought when I bought my new... Yeah. I thought when... Maybe I should have went with the brown-colored trail runners instead of the green ones I got. That way it wouldn't show all the mud. Oh, it's been so bad. I want to go hiking again.
Did you get a lot of rain?
Did I get what? Dave got some.
We got some last week, I think. I don't know if it's raining.
Man, wasn't there fires or something in North Carolina?
South Carolina, too, yeah. There was a fire about 4 miles from my house.
A big one.
Yeah, well, it was another one about 20 miles that was even bigger. But, yeah, we've had a couple of fires here. But one of them was on... The biggest one was caused by this group of teenagers who went hiking and smoking cigarettes and didn't put it, you know, still on the ground.
Of course.
Yep.
It was Dave.
Of course.
And the dog he sentenced to death. we had a lot of rain here. Like, just for one day, it was like downpours.
Right.
Really frequently.
Yeah, these fires were 0% contained for a couple of days. I mean, just we were waiting on rain before they could get them under control.
Yeah, those were crazy, weren't they? Did it kill people? Or?
I don't think so. I know the one closest to me burned a house that was under construction, and I don't think it burned any other structures. But the big one, they evacuated a lot of inhabited areas, but this was a state park, so there weren't a lot of houses, you know, where the fire actually was. It was all, you know, thousands of acres, but
damn. South Carolina.
I think we're supposed to get some rain next week. It's been dry and windy here this week. I cut my grass last week for the first time.
How many pulls on the mower did it take?
Oh, it's a riding lawnmower.
Oh, so you just turned the key?
Yep. I tuned it up. I changed the spark plugs and sharpened the blades and changed the oil on the air filter and the fuel filter. And it cranked right up.
Nice.
I need to cut grass again tomorrow, though, I think. Friday or Saturday.
That's the best part. I mean, I might have an HOA, but I don't have to mow the fucking grass. That's all included. I don't mind it whatsoever. I hated cutting grass.
Oh, I love cutting grass if it means I can't even see my neighbors.
I had to buy a new lawnmower. My old lawnmower, I might have been able to fix it. New flywheel. I'd have had to fix the safety catch on it because the wire for that snapped.
Sometimes it's just easier.
I got this Ryobi 40 volt.
That's, the electric one?
Yeah, the electric one that you squeeze it and it starts going forward.
Yeah.
Nice.
Self-drive.
I got my mother-in-law one of those. I've used it once.
Oh, it's so much easier to mow my lawn with a self-drive.
Yeah.
Yep.
Takes two batteries, right?
It only uses one of the batteries at a time, and it's okay. Got a slot for a second battery.
Okay, gotcha.
One battery is enough to barely do my front lawn. So okay. I did order a second battery off of Amazon, which I guess isn't from Ryobi.
Well, see, you're in the Ryobi system now, so any of the Ryobi batteries will work with that.
Yeah. No, because most of the other stuff I have is the 18 volt ones, but I didn't think an 18 volt.
Okay.
They do make an 18 volt mower. I just didn't think an 18 volt would do very well with my lawn.
Right. Yeah. Probably not.
I got a Ryobi weed whacker.
Yeah, I have one of those too.
One of my friends from church. Her daughter got their Ryobi. You know, the little blower, you know, the thing you blow the leaves with, the blower, right?
I got one of those, too.
She sat on a skateboard and put it behind her and said, this is what I'm going to do. And she fired it up, and my friend added the Dukes of Hazzard song to the video. And I'm like, it was funny as hell, man. This little girl riding her skateboard with the blower in the back. It's like, her daughter's a character, man. She is just... Both her younger ones, I don't know what the hell happened. They're just both funny as hell, man. Ugh.
Yeah, Joe, my son-in-law works at Ryobi, and he actually runs the lawnmower department, I think. Put this way.
Hmm.
He does something with the lawnmowers. But...
Shit, send me some batteries.
Right?
Those things ain't cheap.
No, they ain't.
That's a bad thing with, you know, like, I don't know if I, see, that's the thing, I have a drill, and it was a kid that had the drill and the flashlight, and,
I got
the drill, the flashlight, a Hitachi one, and I probably can't find batteries for it anymore, I guarantee you that.
I got two drills, I got the compressor, I don't have the flashlight. I have the blower and I have the weed whacker, and those are all the 18 volt ones. Oh, and I have the saw, one of their saws.
Yeah, I got a chainsaw.
Right.
Not the chainsaw. I do have electric chainsaws, but I wanted those to be plug-in because I realize how much they're going to drain.
Yeah.
I have a. Oh gosh, what is it? A bladed saw.
A straight blade.
No, it's not a jigsaw. Not a bandsaw.
Hacksaw.
It's not a hacksaw. Hacksaw is handheld and hand powered.
Sawzall.
Let me go look. It's over here.
I got one.
Lovely
back here
little
too.
Rotary saw.
Mine's not rotary, mine's just a straight blade. I guess they're reciprocating.
Yeah, like a jigsaw is what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I have.
But this one, oh gosh, all it says is one plus. That's not useful.
I need to get a cordless shot back at some point.
I got one of those, Roby. Roby makes a my pool's getting converted to salt water hopefully this week or next week probably, but Roby makes a pool vacuum now.
Nice.
A plug-in one?
Battery operated. Submersible.
Well, I know they make plug-in stuff too, or they used to. I don't know if they still do. Oh, but they've got a lot of cool stuff that I haven't gotten, like the Bluetooth radio.
I got one of those.
Oh, yeah.
The shop fan.
I got one of those.
Your kid works there.
He's got me hooked up.
Right? Send me some of this cool stuff. Come on.
So you got the, do you have the zero turn mower?
No, I got a John Deere mower. That's what I got. I got it before he started working there. But he's got a riding, he's got a battery operated riding lawnmower. His yard's a whole lot smaller than mine.
Circular saw. It's a circular saw is what I have.
Nice.
And for 18 volts, I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I kind of want to get one of them, like a Jackery or an Anchor Solix battery, you know, for like when you go camping and stuff like that, or back up at home.
Got to wrap this up. Dave's got to get to bed.
Yeah, it's Dave. 10 o'clock, man.
10:02. We actually started on time. 10:03, excuse me.
Yep.
Okay, get up for your grandson tomorrow,
Joe's
right?
His daughter is short.
Yep. I'm off Friday, though. But I still got to take care of the wife.
Is the wife giving you, making sure you go get the Easter candy for the kids?
Nah, she's already gotten it.
How did she get it?
Nice. Oh, she does it. She does it early.
She did it last year. Now it's all stale. They're young. They won't know the difference, right?
I don't know if she got him any candy, but she'll probably get it after Easter. Or send me Monday, yeah.
Well,
here's a recipe for you, Joel.
Oh, yeah?
Probably needs a little bit of adapting.
I need to get, actually, Form had a recipe book for their powder. I actually had them send it to me in an email. I'll have to check that out.
All right, I'm going to play
well,
this out.
Post ever,
play
let's
that.
See.
Here we go.
Apple fries? Oh, dude, oh that God. Sounds it's that Hacker sounds fire.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I'm in the dining room having sushi.
All right. Oh, my goodness. It's showtime.
Hey, there's a recipe for blueberry muffins made with the blueberry muffin protein powder that I currently have in my cabinet.
Is that what Joe sent you?
No.
No.
No, the other what he sent was apple fry, air fried apples.
It, like I said, it needs a little bit of adjusting because, you know, it's still got like regular sugar in it, so.
Yeah, you can put, you can probably put stevia in place of it. Or a resveratrol, one of the two. I'd skip the nutmeg. I'm not a huge nutmeg fan. Oh, that's from Valerie Bertinelli.
You don't like nutmeg?
I do and I don't. Like, my mom never put it in pumpkin pie because she hates nutmeg. So that's how I'd make mine. So it's just basically just cinnamon. I don't even put allspice in it.
What do you put in it your sound, pumpkin pie spice?
Cinnamon.
Oh, nutmeg. Not nutmeg, not allspice, and not
nope.
Mace? Put mace in there?
Cloves either. No,
you don't put cloves in there?
Clove, nutmeg. Wait. No.
So it's just cinnamon?
I like to taste pumpkin.
It's pumpkin. It's a pumpkin cinnamon pie?
Sounds
basically.
Like it.
Yeah. Tastes good.
I'm not saying it doesn't taste sweet. Good.
It's sweet. Tastes good. You can taste the pumpkin.
How is
granted,
it that you like
talking
pumpkin?
To the guy, I
pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin spice
stuff.
Everything, I know. Yeah, but, I can't explain it. That's just how I make my pie. That's all.
No. But I mean,
half
like
the time too.
Isn't all the pumpkin spice stuff have nutmeg flavor and allspice
oh,
flavor
yeah.
in it?
Yep, it usually does. Yep. And I don't mind it in that, but in the pie, forget it. It's weird. I know.
That sounds like a mental block to me.
Me.
You're making a food scientist cry.
Right.
He worked on all that pumpkin. He worked on the Duke's pumpkin spice mayonnaise.
Now that would be disgusting.
Why
this
daggone
recipe
that,
book,
Dave?
First form posted. This is gonna be dangerous, man.
A pumpkin spice mayonnaise from Duke's. I would puke right
Dude,
there, man.
Disgusting.
He opened that damn jar up.
It's got twang.
It's got a picture right. of Dave Yates on the back. Especially formulated for you. It's just him standing
yeah,
there naked with a Duke's
delicious.
Mayonnaise jar placed over his genitals.
Nice and creamy, huh?
That's why they had to switch
I had
to
a
plastic.
Recipe. I had a recipe for a key lime pie, like a keto key lime pie. One of the main ingredients
Doesn't
in
sound
it was
right.
avocado.
Ugh.
Yeah, you couldn't taste the avocado because he had so much other stuff in it.
Like what? Did you?
Had
was
like,
there lime in it?
Well, lime. Yeah, there was lime in it. But it had like erythritol.
Cauliflower.
No. Cauliflower pizza crust can be good, but it can be nasty too.
It was a clean lime pie with no lime, avocado.
It had instead of like a graham cracker for the crust, you used one of the almond based crusts.
Okay.
Almond flour. Hey, she liked it.
Who did?
My
Your wife.
Oh. Misty
I'm,
did,
I'm
yeah.
sure it probably tasted really great.
Yeah.
Was it green?
Yeah, it was green. Yeah. Very green. I Facebook messaged my sister-in-law and said, "What do you want me to bring?" I was going to try and come up with a
She said not
Dave's
pumpkin spice mayonnaise.
She's like, no, the cheesecake. I got the cheesecake. You can bring an appetizer. I'm like, shit, I've never brought an appetizer before. I'm used to baking a cheesecake.
Make the Chex Mix, man. There
can.
You go. That's an appetizer.
Yeah, that's an idea.
You get Ooh, some Chex
I could
Mix.
Smoke it.
Yeah, you get
Actually,
some Chex
one of
Mix.
My
ideas. You mix Chex. You mix it up with some of the Dave's.
One of my
pumpkin spice
ideas
mayonnaise,
is,
you got yourself a treat.
One of my ideas is to make some smoked cream cheese. That's delicious. You cover it in a rub, so it can be like sweet, like cinnamon sugar rub, or like any kind of barbecue rub, and you just rub it all over, and then you run a knife over the top of the cream cheese, and then you smoke it for about 3 hours, and you can do it in a pit boss, or you can do a cold smoke from the smoke tube. But it actually gets that smokiness into the cream cheese, and it's delicious.
How would you shape it into a cube or something to have this, or you just
no? I just buy the cube, the bricks of cream cheese.
Oh yeah, and then you roll it in the rub. Is that it?
Yes.
What's the temperature you do that at? Yeah.
Very low. Well, you use smoke mode on the Pit Boss, so that's about 180.
Okay.
So it's very low. It takes a while. It's just to get the smokiness into it. It's not to melt it.
Well, no, I know that, but I was just like, how do you prevent the heat from getting in there?
Right.
You leaned over and said to her while she was sleeping, I need to buy a new server, right? Is that how it goes?
No, I brought this up before her surgery. So I brought this up a while ago.
Oh.
I got to give her plenty of advance warning.
I don't know how long I'm going to be on today. I had a root canal earlier.
Oh, boy.
Those are never fun.
I've never had one, and I don't want one.
They had a lot of trouble packing it, so I spent about an hour there with them drying it out and then trying to pack it and then failing and then cutting out part and adding more in. And
Yeah, my youngest daughter graduates dental hygiene school in a couple of weeks, but when she got her dental assisting degree, she worked for a year with an endodontist in doing nothing but assisting with root canals. She enjoyed it. Right? The patients don't.
Of course not.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
So you came up in our conversations this weekend.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Uh-oh. We were driving around Hampton, and I saw a yard sign that said, this is Duke's country.
Okay.
And I pointed out to my wife, and I said, oh, I never told you. I said, Dave Yates used to work for the Duke's company.
I was quality control manager.
And she said, Dave? I said, yeah, Dave from the show. And she said, oh, that asshole. And I said, no, he's the whole ass. And she asked a very, valid question that I wasn't fully able to answer. And is like, what exactly did you do? Like, what?
I was quality control.
But what does that mean? Like,
that means
did you taste?
I was responsible for all quality for everything we made.
Okay.
I ran the microbiology lab, the dissolved oxygen lab, and the chemistry lab, and I was over all the quality inspectors. So it was like 35 people, but it was customer complaints, anything that went out of the building could not or came into the building, I had to approve it.
So it was all your fault.
Like,
yeah.
So you would have to regularly take analyses of product coming in, ingredients coming in, and product going out.
Yep.
Is that?
And like if there was a break on the line, meaning a glass jar broke, I was in charge of making sure that we did a military grade inspection on that lot of material, make sure there was no glass in it. Anything quality related, I was over that. But the thing I spent the most time doing, though, my primary activity, other than all that other, was checking the emulsion on the mayonnaise lines, which means I had to go out to the line, get a sample of mayonnaise after the nitrogen was injected, after it had been milled. It went through a pre-mill, what was called a Lenko mixer, and it went through a colloidal mill. And I would get a sample, I would look at it on a microscope and measure the micelles, the little oil drops that were oil and water emulsion, and to make sure those were in the, I think, 4 to 6 nanometer range. If they got smaller than that, the emulsion would break. If they were bigger than that, it wasn't mayonnaise, it was soup. That's what I did mostly. I made sure the mayonnaise didn't break, because Duke's mayonnaise is oil, vinegar, salt, and eggs. And that's it. So there's nothing in there to make the emulsion set up other than the meal. So very physical process, but there's nothing chemically going on to make the emulsion stable. So if you freeze Duke's mayonnaise, it'll break. You get a jar of Miracle Whip or Hellman's, you can freeze it and thaw it out, and it won't break. It won't separate. But Duke's mayonnaise will.
Huh.
I'd never freeze mayo anyway, but okay.
No, most people don't. But I mean, other mayonnaises, Hellman's and Miracle Whip, those mayonnaises, Miracle Whip's not a mayonnaise. They have like
Miracle Whip is garbage.
They have solids in them, like mustard flour or some acid, you know, something to make the emulsion more stable. They add stabilizers or emulsion aids.
Was the worst glass breakage on the line that day when you said, guess what I saw on the internet? And you squatted over the line and tried to pick up it. And ba-boom. And then,
But yeah, I just saw an obituary this week of a guy I worked with. He worked for me, actually, for 6.5 years. He just died.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Bummer.
Yep. I mean, I'd not thought of him in 30 years, and then, you know, there's his obituary. It was sort of saying.
I'm sorry, Dave. Was he still working for Dukes?
I just got back.
He retired in 2006.
Oh.
I left in 96. I was there from 90 to almost 97.
What were you going to say, Joel?
I just got back from the gym. As I say, I just got back from the gym doing a run. Yeah.
I thought that had something to do with another obituary.
No, not obituary. No, no.
A hairy bitchy. What episode is this, Dave?
Bitchy. 1095.
You all in, baby. Let's go. You all in. Oh, let's get this show going. Joe's got a root canal he's got to tender.